Well, welcome to another episode of Scientology Fair Game. Hello, Mikey.
Hi, Lily.
So today we have a special guest, and we're going to introduce him in a minute. So before we start, Mike, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Scientology front groups, what that is, just very briefly.
Yeah. Well, you know, Leah, Scientology has a number of organizations that they have created over the years to present to the world a sort of secular front of legitimacy, or an attempt to gain legitimacy for L. Ron Hubbard and his quote-unquote technology, and therefore for Scientology itself. And these organizations go by various names, and they're in various fields. There's one in the field of education called Applied Scholastics, and there's one about criminal reform called Criminon, and there's the Way to Happiness Foundation, and then there is these interfaith organizations where they create these little sort of organizations that supposedly bring together all religions seeking to gain religious acceptance for Scientology and try and find people who will speak on their behalf when they get in trouble or they've got a PR flap or something. And then there is sort of the big daddy of these organizations, which is Narcanon, which is an organization that was created by L. Ron Hubbard based on the technologies, the writings of L. Ron Hubbard, to deal with people who have drug problems. And Narcanon has had various successes and various failures. And all the while, it presents itself as the single most effective drug rehabilitation program on earth.
Now, Mike, you're not being sarcastic. I mean, they've even said, they say about themselves that they have a 76% success rate.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes they say even higher than that, but that seems to be the one that they've kind of fallen back on. But others, they've said 80 or 90%. I mean, it's crazy. There is no drug rehabilitation program on earth that actually has that sort of success rate. And we're going to get into that a little more in this in our show today. Mm-hmm. But Narcanon has always been the sort of lead thing that Scientology has pushed out as, look what we do. We rehabilitate more drug addicts than anybody on earth. We have these massive drug education programs. We're the shit when it comes to drug education, drug rehabilitation, and all things related to drugs. And Narcanon is the front organization for that. And interestingly, Narcanon uses exactly the same techniques developed by Hubbard to rehabilitate drug addicts in the secular world as the Church of Scientology, quote unquote, uses in the Scientology organizations. You go through precisely and exactly the same steps in each place. If you're doing it within a Scientology organization, it's the same steps as if you're doing it in Narcanon, except they've taken out any religious terminology in the Narcanon program. Like, they take out the word religion or something that sounds like religion, but it's exactly the same. All the steps, all the techniques are identical. And
now, before you move on, Mike, secular means non-religious, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So the purpose, because I want to just go over why Scientology has created these front groups, and the purpose of these front groups is covered in a policy called the public image. And Mike, you could put that up on your website, right?
On
the website and on your blog. But I want to be clear with everybody at home, because These things, drug-free world, the Stan League, that's supposed to be the, you know, guarding the First Amendment, you know, the freedom media ethics is pretending to be like the watchdog of the media, right? You have ABLE, Association for Better Living and Education. So these things sound, right? Citizens Commission on Human Rights, right? Like, this sounds amazing, right? These things like, oh, look at this, an interfaith thing. Oh, look at this. Okay, the purpose of these groups is because L. Ron Hubbard wrote a policy of how to infiltrate real organizations that are doing the work. And to the second part is to make people Scientologists. So there's nothing secular about it, because the purpose of these organizations is A, to align themselves with real organizations doing this type of work, and B, to gain control, and C, to make Scientologists. To Scientologists, because like you said, it's all Scientology. It's just that those words are taken out purposely, right? To be accepted.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. And there is one other reason for these things to exist.
What?
Particularly in the case of Narconon and Applied Scholastics, it's to be able to get government money for their programs.
Right.
Because government in the United States cannot give money to religious organizations, but they can give it to a secular organization. So Hubbard wrote extensively about the need for getting government funding for Narconon and Applied Scholastics. And also there is the issue of now insurance funding, and we will get into that. But this was another big thing. Even though, as you know, Leah, Hubbard has terrible things to say about governments and about socialism and about rewarding the downstats and taking money for taxes and redistributing wealth, et cetera, all of that went out the window when there was the possibility of getting government grants for Narconon or Applied Scholastics organizations or whatever. So the whole structure was put in place in order to qualify to be able to get those things.
Right. And how much does Narconon cost?
It's expensive. I don't know if it's expensive compared to other programs, but what I understand, and we can get into this also, is it's about $30,000 for someone to do the Narconon program.
Okay. All right. And with that, Narconon. So Narconon, the front group of Scientology, is still in existence.
Barely.
Okay. But we okay. Well, it is still in existence, and we have a great guest with us today. If you'd like to introduce him, Mike.
Yes, absolutely. Luke Catton. Hi, Luke.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Leah.
Hi, Luke.
Is the former president of Narconon Arrowhead, and he is incredibly well-informed about the activities of Narconon, because he was, of course, a part of the what's called the flagship Narconon. Narconon Arrowhead was the model Narconon from which all others were supposed to follow, and they were supposed to send people there to train. And Luke was the president there for many years, knows a lot of the inside workings, but he ultimately left and became a very, very effective whistleblower against the abuses of Narconon. He also wrote a book called Have You Told All? Inside My Time with Narconon and Scientology. And he has personal experiences with being fair gamed by Scientology subsequently. And I'm really excited to have Luke on with us today, because I've known him for a long time. And he is one of the good guys who has stood up and taken a lot of heat for exposing some of the terrible things that have happened in Narconon.
Well, thank you, Luke, for joining us, and thank you for the work that you're doing, and I know you will continue to do. But let's get into your story. You went into Narconon as a patient, right, for alcohol abuse, right?
That's right.
Were you a Scientologist before that?
My parents had been introduced to Scientology through a WISE consultant, to...
WISE. Sorry, another front group that we didn't mention. Yeah, Luke, why don't you explain what WISE is?
Sure. So WISE stands for the World Institute of Scientology Enterprises. And it's a, it's another front group that's aimed to take L. Ron Hubbard policy and put it in the business world and try to run businesses. So my parents worked in the dental field at the time. And a WISE consultant had really gotten them involved in doing some services. And I was an aimless teenager. I finished school early. I didn't want to go to college, drinking too much, you know, not a whole lot of ambition at the time. And wound up getting pulled over. And their consultant for the church and for WISE said, you need to send him to Narconon.
Okay.
So I went there in 1998 to Narconon, Oklahoma, which at the time it was before Arrowhead.
Okay.
It was called Narconon Shalako.
Right.
And I didn't really have any intention on doing much of anything in there. So I wound up back there a year later again in 1999. And from there developed some friendships to the point where I started to become interested in Scientology at that time. And wound up about a year after that, joining staff, getting recruited for staff.
So working as an employee.
Yeah. And something I just wanted to interject here. The truth of the matter is that Narconon has some success.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
oh yeah.
I have met people at Narconon who are exceedingly happy with the result that they got. Mm-hmm. But Luke, who is now an expert in this field, like much more broadly than Narconon, he still works in this area of rehabilitation, will tell you that the very fact of taking someone to a location which is a remote location from their normal environment and having people there that are like friends and people who have a sympathetic ear or whatever will produce results.
Sure. I mean, listen, no one's could say, like, if Luke didn't come live here and I was like, Luke, we're waking up at 8. We're going to do a workout. After that, we're going to get some massages. Then we're going to eat breakfast. And then I give you like a purpose. And here's the mission. It's all about you, Luke. And then we're going to expand the mission to now giving you a purpose in life, which is to help others do the same thing. So you're given, you're absolutely right, Mike. Who's to say that another program wouldn't work or just changing someone's, we don't know. But anyway, we're actually being gracious and saying, okay, sometimes it does help people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the next point I was going to make is though Scientology says that Narconon and Applied Scholastics and WISE and et cetera, are not, absolutely not recruitment vehicles for Scientology, that is another absolute lie.
Right.
And Luke is like the perfect example. And this is what Scientology relies on. And Luke's parents were another perfect example. They get some benefit from something, and then the push comes, look, L. Ron Hubbard developed this technology that helps you with X, Y, and Z. Why don't you find out more about L. Ron Hubbard, and it can help you in more areas of your life.
Well, so, Luke, isn't that true? I mean, Luke, it became about Scientology, right?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And that's the people who advanced in the ranks of executive status within Narconon and had the most responsibility were the Scientologists.
Right.
So not all staff became Scientologists, of course, and things like that. But the ones who were in charge absolutely were.
Right. All right. So take us through your story.
Okay. So I'd gotten recruited. I was back in Atlanta and gotten recruited to go do drug education and trained in Boston. With the father of Narconon drug education, Bobby Wiggins, and trained out there for about 3 months, and then went and started the drug education unit for Narconon in Oklahoma, where we went around and talked to kids at schools. And you know, initially that sounds just like a lot of the other stuff. It sounds like it's a good thing to do, and but within that are Hubbard isms that are interjected into these lectures that give false information right alongside, you know, true information. And so it's all accepted by children as being true. And, you know, it's, again, it's a PR thing as well about trying to, you know, get people to have a favorable opinion of L. Ron Hubbard.
Right.
From there, we moved from, once I got to Oklahoma, we moved to Arrowhead in the summer of 2001. And that's when I first met some ABLE staff, Rena Weinberg specifically.
And this is, ABLE is another front group for Scientology, and that stands for Association for Better Living and Education.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Right. And ABLE is sort of like the trademark holder for Narconon and Criminon and Applied Scholastics and the Way to Happiness Foundation.
Okay.
And we did this big grand opening, and I had my role in that, and kind of got pinpointed at the time working with Rena Weinberg, who was the president of ABLE at the time, and Clark Carr, who was the president of Narconon International. And when the vacancy became, when there was a vacancy in the president role at Arrowhead later that year, then I was tapped for it. So I think I was 23 years old at the time, 24 maybe, and became the president of Arrowhead in December of 2001.
Okay. And then what happened?
lots of insanity.
Yeah.
There was... You know, it became huge. It did. Like, we were very successful at a number of things. This was the boom of the internet as well. So from 2000 to, say, 2006, just about any internet search that anybody did online looking for drug rehab of any type wound up at a Narconon call center somewhere. Okay. In fact, people would call up and they'd go, is this a Narconon? Because I already talked to another Narconon.
Right.
And so we were really everywhere. And Arrowhead had gotten up to over 250 residential, well, they called them students, but residential patients, and was really, really big for a long time. We were making those inroads into government. I had a position on the local provider organization with other treatment centers where we collaborated on policy for the state. And, you know, it got to be this thing where we actually thought that we were going to change the drug rehab laws in the world and make them favorable to, you know, to get them away from the psychs and get them in the hands of people like us who knew what we were doing.
Right. And look, if we could just briefly talk about what were you doing? I mean, what was Narconon's program?
It was like Mike said, it was the beginning of the bridge, you know,
the Scientology, religion. So it's the beginning. And explain to people what that is. What is the program of Narconon?
Sure.
And in the end, Scientology, the beginning stages of Scientology. You're right. It's the entry point to Scientology. Like they say, there's an entry drug. It's like this is the entryway to Scientology teachings and getting in introduced and pulled into this cult begins in places like this. So, and that program is what? Sitting in the sauna and sweating out the drugs or alcohol that L. Ron Hubbard says is stored in the fatty tissue? Is that the basic technology of Narconon?
Yeah, absolutely. That was a big part of it. That was the biggest selling point that people used in the call centers to try and get people to come in and say, well, you know, you haven't done this yet. You haven't eliminated your cravings. And then there's also the training routines, introductory training routines.
What is that?
It's the communications course, basically.
Scientology.
Again, Scientology, yeah.
Okay.
The Scientology training routines. Scientology objectives, which are...
What is that?
They're auditing procedures. It actually tells people this is an auditor. They teach Narconon clients that this an auditor is one who listens. And so you have... your student and you have your auditor, and they give a series of commands and questions to elicit a response and go around the room and touch things and do things for hours on end, basically giving up the ability to be controlled and to control.
Right.
Between the training routines and the objectives, that's really the biggest thing.
And when you presented this to real organizations and real, legit organizations that are doing this type of work, they're seeing this and going, this is legit. This is a secular program. This makes sense for people who are trying to overcome their addictions with drugs and alcohol, is to sit in a sauna and take an enormous amount of niacin and vitamins and do Scientology processing. People were saying yes and putting their stamp on you guys?
Enough people were saying yes, you know, at the time. And it all goes about, there's like a sleight of hand. So some of the times we would show these quote unquote scientific studies, for example.
Right. Okay.
And those studies were done by...
And they were not?
Well, they were done by like FAES, which is a Scientologist organization, the Foundation for Advancement of Science and Education. And they say, look here.
Another front group. Okay.
Here's another front group that has verified the validity of Narcanon, or found these drug metabolites in people sweating them out in the sauna and things that made it look legitimate.
Right. And so what you were doing was like, okay, making Scientologists.
Yes.
Rather than, I mean, and Mike, to be fair, right? I mean, I guess you did see some success, Luke, or you would not be there, right? But the success was really about making Scientologists.
That was the goal. There were lower level people, absolutely, who didn't see that as the goal. But when we would sit in meetings in our executive council or go to Los Angeles and sit in meetings at ABLE, and meetings with people in the church specifically. Now, ABLE was staffed by Sea Org members, so that's still a church. But that was always the goal, is how many people are we converting? What's happening? How much money is coming in? And at one point, Narcanon was bringing in probably over $50 million a year easily between just in the United States.
What?
Yeah.
What? So the Church of Scientology was making $50 million a year on top of what they were making from their parishioners a year.
Right.
Got it. Okay, wow. So it was never how many people have we actually helped. Your statistics were based on how much gross income was coming into Scientology and how many Scientologists you were making, which equals money.
Sure. And, they had in their statistics, they tracked the number of drug-free, which they counted as every person who ever graduated. Just like the total number of Scientologists, for example, is the total number of people who've ever completed anything. The same thing for Narcanon. The number of drug-free was anybody who ever graduated the program.
Right.
And then when they would track the outcome statistics, it was based on, let's say, if there's 100 people that graduated, they would call all 100 of them. They might get a hold of 50 of them. Of them, how many of them self-report that they're doing well? Maybe 40 of those 50 self-report that they're doing well. Next thing you know, that becomes, their 80% success rate when there's no verifiable evidence in there anywhere. And let alone the other half that they never contacted or half that enrolled but never completed the program. So now you're down to like 25% or less.
Right. Wow. Now what happens, because... this sounds amazing. You're doing great. But then when do things take a turn for the worse, Luke?
So we had, as the flagship, we would do things in DC. We would do various government things. And I would get a lot of conflicting orders from my immediate boss, who was the executive director there, Gary Smith. And then ABLE and Narcanon International. And people would want different things, and it wouldn't always match up. And we had a few friends of celebrities who'd come in, and Celebrity Center would insert themselves into what we were doing and violate confidentiality laws by forcing daily reports be sent, via fax to Celebrity Center International on the progress of this person's program at Narcanon.
Right.
And
not a HIPAA violation?
It's a huge HIPAA violation. There's tremendous... I mean, there's so many records of that occurring because there are so many people that went there and went to Louisiana afterwards and other Narcanon centers where these daily reports are ordered, not just requested, they're ordered by Celebrity Center.
Which is a church, which for everybody doesn't know what Celebrity Center is, a Church of Scientology in Los Angeles that caters to celebrities. So the Church of Scientology is running Narcanon and running it like a church. Like it's part of the church.
Right.
It is part of the church.
Yeah, absolutely. We were, they used to show this picture online where it said what is now an ideal organization. It used to be called like a central organization. It would show pictures of like Narcanon centers and criminal organizations and Applies Classics group, and that they're all part of the Scientology organization.
Right.
Yes. I'm going to put that there's a great little graphic that David Miscavige used. I'm going to put on the website. But also, Leah, another thing, Luke earlier mentioned these drug lectures to school children.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. If you go to a Scientology event, which you have been to many of, and I have spoken at many of, you will hear David Miscavige or one of the other people talking about how Scientology has delivered drug education to X million children around the world.
Yeah.
That was all Narcanon.
Right.
Well, not all, but the vast majority was Narcanon. That becomes credited as Scientology inside the Scientology organizations and pretends to be not Scientology when the people go out to the schools because they can't have religions going to proselytize in schools.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you ever report these violations, like Mike mentioned, to HIPAA? I mean, were these violations ever reported by you after the fact?
No, not directly. I wrote about them and talked about them, but I didn't make any direct reports about that. I eventually wound up reporting about falsifying certifications for drug counselors, which is part of this insanity that went on as well.
Well, let's get to that. So these things start to see that this is not what it's claiming itself to be.
Right.
And then what take us from there?
So I requested to step down as president. I said, this is ridiculous. I can't do this. And I got punished for it. I was sent out to Los Angeles for a couple months and interrogated because they were sure that I had done something wrong. It couldn't have been that the organization was screwed up. I had to have done something wrong to not want to be president anymore.
And Luke, this is just because of this violation, but what were the other things that were going on that made you say, I need to step down? It wasn't just that.
No, not just that.
Yeah.
At that particular time, that was one of the biggest problems that I had because of there was just conflicting orders coming from everywhere, and I didn't want any part of that anymore.
Right.
But, you know, so I went back, and I was still a full-fledged Scientologist. So I went back and finished my staff contract of 5 years, and then became a field staff member after that, which is somebody who refers people in for Scientology services for commission.
Right.
And I was a top Narcanon field staff member for till what, like 2009, something like that.
And so you were talking about like falsifying records of like counselors and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Was this prior to your leaving or when you got interrogated and came back and was a field staff member?
So when we got our certifications, our counselor certifications, quote unquote, that happened while I was still a staff member. It was known, like they paid bonuses to staff who would go ahead and get these certifications, which consisted of taking a test. The organization itself was actually legitimate. They didn't know what was happening. And the organization from that time, the National Association of Forensic Counselors, filed suit against Narcanon and the church for falsifying their certification applications.
And how were they falsifying those applications?
By, for example, you have to document experience in the field. So it'd be like, how many hours did you do training routines? Well, 3,000 hours. Okay, so we'll count that as 3,000 hours of experience in counseling.
Right.
Or things that are somehow justified for them to give them the apparency of having legitimate experience as a drug counselor.
Right. And so now this company then took to realize that this was happening, and then what happened there?
So, and I apologize for jumping around. That happened down the line after I left and started speaking out that occurred. But eventually, almost everyone or potentially everyone who had certification through them within the Narcanon network all lost. It was either revoked or suspended, or they had to show additional proof, such as an actual college degree or outside courses in order to prove that it wasn't just Narcanon training that they got.
Right.
So, Luke, just explain what you were doing as an FSM and you were living in Clearwater. Why were you living in Clearwater? I got out. I left ultimately the president at Narcanon Arrowhead, and then I transitioned into, I'm married and now I've got a wife and I've got a kid and I'm in Clearwater. Why are you in Clearwater? But I'm being an FSM, blah, 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 blah. And then the Freedom Magazine comes out and the Truth Rundown, and my eyes started opening, blah, blah.
Right. Okay. So after I finished my contract and became the field staff member, I got married while I was on staff. I wound up having a baby and was still being very active as a Scientologist. And where do Scientologists ultimately want to end up is either Clearwater or Los Angeles. And so we wound up in Clearwater. And
your wife is a Scientologist, right?
Yes. And my wife then was a Scientologist. And we were so dedicated that it was ruining us financially. Mm-hmm. The release of the books had come out and all the tapes, and being in Clearwater as a Scientologist, people show up at your door at all hours of the day asking for money for one thing or another, or every time the phone rings, they're asking for money for one thing or another. And it's nonstop. And so the tension was building, and I knew something was really wrong on a much higher level, but I didn't know what it was. And I started to question, where is Rena Weinberg, for example, somebody who I had looked up to who was gone. She was missing. I later found out that she was obviously locked up with Mike and the others. But these questions started to come out. So shortly after that, as I realized that things were truly insane, then all of a sudden this Freedom Magazine was delivered to our doorstep. And it had the paucity of lunatics or whatever it was.
Oh, yes, everyone. This is another front group of Scientology, their magazine, Freedom Mag, Freedom Magazine. And they now have a website. Is this where all the hate websites are, Mike, or?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes, okay. Yes. Everything ultimately falls under the umbrella of freedom.
Okay. All right. So the Freedom Magazine shows up, and it has all the former members, high-ranking members of Scientology on it, including Mike, right? Marty Rathbun. Was Marty on that one? Paul Haggis.
Yes.
Claire and Mark Headley.
Claire and Mark. Yep. Christy. Yep. Yes. All on the front, called the Posse of Lunatics. And they delivered it to every household in Clearwater.
And what did you think of that, Luke? Because, as Scientologists, people indoctrinated to Scientology, these are things that work on us when we're in. Some of us see that and go, oh, my God, look at Mike Rinder's gone crazy. Marty Rathbun's gone crazy. And the church does a PR campaign to get everybody on the side of Scientology. But you had the exact opposite response to it.
Yeah, totally. I looked at it and said, wow, something's really wrong here. Because here are people that I looked up to watching the events, for example.
Having to stand up for them, to salute them, to respect them. They're treated as like high-ranking military officers. They wear military uniforms. As parishioners and staff members were taught to revere these people.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, go ahead.
And knowing that, how I had been treated at times, knowing that I'm like, wait a second, if I was president of Arrowhead and I'm this much lower on, on the ladder of things, and I know how I was treated, then I have no doubt that there's even at least a little bit of truth to what's going on there. And so I had a conversation with a friend at the time, and we go, yeah, there's definitely some things going on. We'd heard like people getting screamed at Flag, and, knew that, there were lots of things that weren't okay that were going on. And so that really made me want to start looking.
Right.
And, listening to your show with Mark Vicente about being willing to look is really the first huge step.
Yep. Yep.
And that was what did it for me, was finally being willing to look. And so I went on and I saw, interview with Jenna Miscavige on Nightline, and saw all the stuff and papers, and my in-laws at the time were in town, and I think Christy was on NBC from like the Today Show after a New York Times article, and all this stuff started to open up, and I went, all right, that's it. Like, this is crazy. We got to get out of here. And we wound up being able to move to Oklahoma, back to Oklahoma, and get out of Clearwater.
Right.
I was whatever it took, I was ready to get out of there.
Well, you pretty safe to, there's not a whole lot of Scientologists in Oklahoma.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So outside of Arrowhead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But during that time, I kept questioning things. So I was, by that time, on Flag's, what they call MAA lines, or master at arms, or the controlling ethics people when you get in trouble.
So these are the MAA is like the, like you said, it's called the ethics officer or master at arms. And that's the person who really doles out punishment to parishioners mm-hmm. and to Sea Org members. And that's who basically they're like your parents. When you get in trouble, you get sent to the bad parent, you know, the harder parents. And this person is the one who gives you your punishment.
Yeah. And have no concept of reality because they're mostly young kids who are
like
raised 12. In the Sea Org.
Yeah, they're like 12 years old. And if I had to like give it like an if you can imagine what Nazi youth are like, mm-hmm. that's what you're talking to. You're talking to a robot. You're talking to someone who has really really crazy ideas about life and is that a good Mike, is that a good description of their demeanor? Like no sympathy, no compassion, no empathy.
Zero.
As none was given to them being raised in Scientology in the Sea Org, right? They're just basically given away by their parents to be living an adult life. Yeah.
And the reason most of them are young is because that they were raised as Scientologists and they have grown up that way with that mindset and that attitude sort of baked in, and that makes them perfect candidates for becoming ethics officers. And go on with your story.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
All right. So while I continued questioning things, I was openly talking to people at Flag and saying, hey, this, you know, this doesn't make sense. And then I started to stumble on more and more websites and articles and wound up getting verbally declared a suppressive person, which even in Scientology policy is off policy.
Meaning you were labeled a suppressive, which is an enemy.
Yes.
Because you were looking.
Right. Because I was looking and because I was starting to ask questions and talk to people and things like that.
Yeah.
And I was supposed to comply with this reentry program that they call it the ADE, steps ADE, to get back in the fold, if you will. And I refused at that point. I said, no, this is crazy, because as part of what happened with that. And there's a lot. This is where things really started to get super crazy for me. But where I, for example, wound up driving back to Clearwater to have an interview where I was promised that I would be given information on what the real deal was with the departure of Mike and others, and where Rena Weinberg was and what was happening in the organization and things like that. And wound up getting this private 3-hour interrogation in my hotel room by somebody, by a woman named Kathy True in the Office of Special Affairs.
Okay, so Kathy True shows up to your hotel room with a Scientology lie detector, their e-meter, forces you on the cans, and they're interrogating you and asking you probably questions like, have you been on the internet? Who are you talking to? What are your evil intentions towards Mr. David Miscavige? What are your evil intentions towards mankind? Right? Like, you are now seen as the devil.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And naive little old me at the time thought that I was actually going to be given information in exchange. So after I got through with this, she goes, oh, you're too dangerous. I can't tell you anything now. I'm going to have to go back to Flag, and left.
Wow.
And I was like, what the hell just happened? I just divulged everything that I'd been doing. And you packed up and said, sorry about your luck.
Everything you've been doing, meaning just looking on the internet and doing your own research and finding out the truth about Scientology, these are your crimes.
Those were my crimes. Those terrible, terrible things.
And for that, you were labeled a suppressive person, an enemy.
I wound up getting the official written suppressive person declare, I don't know, about a year later. It took them a while.
Well, you have it? You actually have it?
No, I don't have it. Oh. But I got called back into the Justice Chief. Her office in Flag, Kara Goloszewski, and she showed it to me one day. By then, I'd gotten divorced. My crimes were revealed to everyone.
Okay, what happens next?
So, as part of this, all of my friends and associates and business relationships, because 90%+ of them were all Scientologists. They all were forced to disconnect from me as well.
Right.
Faxes and
You mean the secular organization?
Yes.
All the people in the secular organization were forced to disconnect from you because you got declared by the Church of Scientology?
For looking on the internet?
Exactly. It makes sense. So they flag sent out
Now flag messages. Is the Mecca, everyone. That's the hub, Scientology hub in Clearwater, Florida.
The spiritual headquarters.
It's like Disneyland.
Yes. Yes. In the upside down.
Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead, Luke.
They sent out, you know, notes to every Narconon center everywhere. It said, you know, Lucas Catton is hereby declared a suppressive person. You must cut all ties with him immediately and report directly to, you know, the justice chief if there's any, you know, whatever.
Right.
So as part of that, I had stopped being a field staff member, of course, for Narconon, but the websites that I owned at the time, I couldn't support that at all. So I had sold them, and the people that I'd sold them to were still Scientologists, and they wound up finding a loophole and figured out a way to, once I got declared, figured out a way to quit paying me the rest of the money that we agreed that they would pay me. So I lost, you know, like $150,000. Literally, like one day, I got a note in the mail from their attorney saying, "Sorry, we're not going to pay you anymore."
Wow!
And
you had no recourse. You had no legal recourse.
I didn't, because there was. I say I didn't. I didn't believe that I did. Right. I may have, but at the time, you know, fighting for lots of other things, I thought, well, it was my fault for missing this loophole in the contract.
And, oh, you were thinking like a Scientologist, that it was your fault.
Right. Still, because all this, you know, all this time, I'm still trying to figure out what the hell happened to me. How did I get sucked into this? Why is all this going on? Why, you know, why are people behaving like this? Why are my best friends?
Just to interject something else.
Yeah.
This is a very common thing with Scientologists, believing that other Scientologists are part of the most ethical organization on earth and would never, ever do anything that was unethical or improper. And then the minute they get declared, those people just take advantage of that and screw them royally. And it's a lot of stuff done on trust when you're in Scientology and on the basis that you can trust these other people. And then suddenly they turn around and you become fair game.
Mm-hmm. And once you're fair game, you're not a human being.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, lesson, absolutely.
So then what?
Well, around this time, I thought I was just going to kind of stay in my little cave and figure out what I was going to do with my life and in the world. And
because, like, Luke, who's your support system at this point? Like, you're all alone. You have no income. You have no friends. I mean, your former friends. I mean, it's must have been terribly lonely and scary for you at this moment in time.
It was rough. It was the most spiritually soul crushing thing that I'd been through in my life, trying to fight for an existence and figure out who I was and what the hell happened over the last 12 years.
Right.
Around this time, people started dying at Narconon, Arrowhead. Right after I got declared a suppressive person, news stories started to hit about these deaths at Narconon, Arrowhead. And there had been one at Narconon of Georgia prior to that that I was aware of, but it was like this weird one-off thing, or so I thought at the time, that it must have been an isolated incident.
Sure.
And then a series of people died at in Oklahoma after that.
Mm-hmm.
And I started seeing depositions that were posted online and news media interviews with people who worked for Narconon, such as Gary Smith and some other executives, and some of the attorneys were getting these depositions posted online for people to see as well. And I saw them blatantly lying.
Right.
And I'm like, wait a second. I sat in those meetings. I know for a fact they're lying. And nobody's calling them out on it other than people who were at the time potentially on the outside or speculated or whatever. And I had actual firsthand knowledge of it. So I said, I personally have to do something about this and try and make up for all the years that I spent helping to build an organization and funneling people into it and at least speak my truth. And so I started.
So what did you do? What was the first thing that you did?
I started commenting on, you know, some ex-Scientology message boards and some Narconon stuff. And then I started, I did a couple interviews, I think, back at the time and things like that. And then I started getting contacted by the attorneys who were filing these wrongful death lawsuits.
Right.
And after that, additionally, getting contacted by investigators who were investigating Narconon for insurance fraud, among other things, in multiple states. And I became a witness for them. I wound up even testifying in a grand jury in Oklahoma, and really for the next couple of years worked to help in the legal realm to keep, to hold people accountable in both civil and criminal courts. Unfortunately, the criminal courts all wound up dropping their cases for one reason or another. And usually it was because of a silly loophole, like insurance fraud, for example. They need to know exactly who was right. responsible for the insurance fraud. They couldn't charge an organization right. with fraud.
Right.
So there was a lot of frustrating parts about that.
Of course. And then as a result, what has happened to Narconon?
It's been decimated right. and by their own doing. You know, I had initially a lot of my old friends at the time, you know, blamed me for things. I'm like, wait a second. I didn't have people die at my centers. I didn't lie to the media. I didn't lie under oath. I didn't do these things. So how can you blame me for Narconon's demise? You know, right.
Which is such a Scientologist thing to do. I mean, it's like, it's never answer to the allegation. It's never, it's always attack the person speaking the truth.
Yeah, exactly. Now, why they didn't get prosecuted is unfortunately part of the stigma that goes along with substance use issues and people with problems at various points in their lives is that it gets lumped together. Sure. It's not like people don't die at other facilities as well. However, these were specific actions that were done by untrained people who were convinced to go there. Like the patients were convinced to go there despite their conditions, or, you know, told that they had trained staff or told that they had appropriate medical personnel. And so it was
when those things were even being falsified, these were yes. not real counselors. They should not have been doing this. Right.
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 Absolutely. Yeah. And this was the issue with this, why these families filed civil lawsuits.
I get it. Right.
Because though they went, I mean, I believe all of those families and the lawyers and a lot of other people went to law enforcement and said there should be criminal prosecutions sure. on this. Yes. And yes. whatever those agencies were decided that there were too many things to overcome to bring a criminal prosecution. And we know the problems with that, Leah,
right.
On anything. And particularly when Scientology is involved, it gets heightened. But they did file civil lawsuits seeking to hold Narconon yeah. accountable for the fact that they had misrepresented
right.
and lied about what they were providing, etc., yes. etc., and had been negligent in looking after the family members of these people were there.
Right, and I want to say, Mike, that those families just sending our thoughts and our love and our support to those families who, again, they were fighting Scientology and lost a loved one, and for what they did, right? Because this would have never happened had they not filed civil suits against Scientology, aka Narconon. And you know, we should applaud them for their courage, for fighting for their family members. Now, we know that they're not Scientologists. I could just tell you that right off the bat. They are not Scientologists, because Scientologists who've lost children in Scientology will not sue Scientology, even when Scientology was directly responsible for their loved one's death.
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
Absolutely right.
What you've done, Luke, is amazing and brave. And it's just kind of like we told the story a little bit as like you were just kind of helping, but I feel like you deserve much more credit in the overall telling of that last part of the story. Mike, thoughts?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say it's interesting that what has happened to Narconon and its demise has been its own doing. And Luke is correct about that. But
He is also kind of like avoiding the limelight and being very modest here, because the truth of the matter is that without whistleblowers like Luke, and and in this case in particular Luke, things would never actually have come to light. And this is the problem with everything that you, every area of Scientology that you go to look at, when there is a legal case or law enforcement or government agencies, Scientology has this ability to cover shit up and have all these stories and all these justifications and, you know, show up with a bunch of affidavits written by people and testimony and this and that. And it befuddles lawyers and it befuddles law enforcement and it befuddles government agencies. And you have got to have someone like Luke in this case who can pass through it and explain, look, this is what's really going on here.
Right, right.
When they say this, this is what it actually means. Right. And if you ask for that, this is what you will get. And they will tell you this, and it's all obfuscation and lying and covering up. And without an interpreter to guide people like that through the process, they never get there.
Totally right.
And that is the absolute truth. And I, you know, I worked with some of these lawyers too, and I very much understand that without people like Luke, and like I said, in particular, in this instance with knocking on Luke himself, this would never have all come to pass. And the those families who sued, and ultimately, most of those cases got settled. In fact, I think all of them did, right, Luke?
Yeah, as far as I know, there's major settlements, absolutely.
And the, and the, and there was a lot. There was a lot of wrongful death cases that ultimately got filed. It wasn't just one or two. It was like a dozen or something. I don't even know the exact number. And other abuses and fraud and misrepresentation to insurance companies and like it just it's the whole sort of all the wheels fell off knocking on literally and it fell to pieces because of the exposure. I mean, they were practicing medicine, they were doing things with people who should never have been treated at a knock-on facility. They should have been on an actual real medical program to help them with their problems. And they were pretending that they had medical doctors on board. And like this, the whole gamut. And today, knock-on is a mere shell of what it used to be. In fact, it's sort of turned into this, instead of the flagship of knock-on being this large facility in Oklahoma, Arrowhead, which, you know, has how many 250 beds or something? Like it's a big place. It's like big. Instead, their flagship facility is now Larry Hagman's old estate in Ojai, California, which has 12 beds and is super exclusive only for celebrities. That's now knocking on big deal is a 12 bed facility in Ojai on top of a mountain that I don't think anybody can even afford to go to. Instead of, as Luke was describing back in the early 2000s, there was a lot of people there and they were making a lot of money. Nowadays, knocking on's name is shit, and it is their own doing, but it would never have come to light and never, and those families would never have gotten what they got out of those cases. And the, you know, even though nobody has been criminally prosecuted, except Mary Risa got criminally prosecuted, didn't she?
They tried.
Oh, she did.
They really tried. Yeah. They wound up getting a non-prosecutorial agreement in order to shut down. So they just went away.
Right. But a bunch of these facilities have literally closed down now. Yeah. And thank God, because The truth is that while Nakanon had value in that some people were helped, it became more and more of a racket. And more, we've got to get their money. We've got to get their money, and making more and more outrageous promises and less service. They went from an organization who, I guess, you know, at least a number of people there were really in the business of trying to help people recover from their addiction. And a number of them were former addicts themselves, and I know them personally, and they're nice, genuine people, to the typical Scientology, we got to get the money, we got to get the money, we will do and say anything to get the money, and then cutting corners and promising stuff and grabbing people off the street, you know, like whatever. And that is the ultimate demise of Nakanon. And Luke deserves an enormous amount of credit for having the balls to stand up. And it takes some courage to go and testify or be a witness against a Scientology organization. Yes. It just does. I don't care. Anybody that hasn't ever done it, they don't have a clue. And if they want to sit around and criticize people saying, oh, you should have done this, you should have done that.
Right.
When you've done it, you know what it's like. And Luke's walked the walk.
Mike, I agree with you. And Luke, you deserve all of this. You deserve all of the validation that you're getting. And I want to talk to you, though, about for this, because like Mike said, this is not an easy thing to do, is to be front and center fighting Scientology. And for that, I'm sure you have been fair gamed by Scientology because of the work that you're doing.
Absolutely. You know, part of it is part of the things that we covered in terms of people, you know, cheating you out of money, or, you know, ruined relationships and disconnection. And mm-hmm. That was one of the biggest things for me personally, and it happened early on, and it was very very detrimental to my psyche back then.
Sure.
And you know, since the fall, I mean, many of the centers have fallen and gone away completely, and things like that. Those that are left are tiny, but many of those people who were my friends who disconnected from me back then have made their way out quietly and have reconnected. And I talk about that in the next thing about reconnection and detailing some of those things, like sitting in, you know, one of the depositions I got called for example, in one of the lawsuits, I wound up doing a 9-hour interrogation with Clark Carr present and their attorneys present. It was like being in a Scientology interrogation, but it was an open-ended deposition about some of the cases. And that was a deliberate attempt to try and discredit me, to try and scare me away, to try and shake me off of these cases.
Shut you up?
Uh-huh. Yeah, to shut me up, exactly.
Yeah.
I had a recent thing happen, which I'm still uncovering, but I later wound up getting remarried and was remarried for a number of years and have two amazing boys and was married to a wonderful woman. And they were over at my house one day, and somebody had actually called the police on me and asked for a welfare check to be done. And when I eventually got the police report, it was a Scientologist in Clearwater, Florida.
Wow.
So it still continues today in various ways to try and intimidate, to try and get back at me, to try and keep me from doing things like this. And I was quiet for a while, but I know that, you know, watching you and Mike do what you do and have the people come out and share what they're doing, I know that, especially since nobody else has come forward for Narconon and or continued to do so, that still is part of the story that has to be told.
Right, and continue to be told.
Yeah.
Luke, do you want to tell us anything, like, as far as what you're doing now? Is there anything?
You don't have to.
Yeah.
Sure.
Anything okay. You feel like we haven't covered?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll tell you what
What you're doing, and give some people advice about if they are ever wanting to go into an Arcanon or Scientology front group program.
Sure. Or if they have someone that has a drug problem, what should they do?
Yeah, that'd be great. Okay.
Absolutely.
ahead.
So since I became a whistleblower and worked with you know, different people, I got reintroduced and sort of re-upped my passion in general for helping sure. people. So I wound up working with other treatment facilities and learned so much about you know, actual treatment and right. actual medical and psychological conditions and how they can be addressed in many different ways. And yeah. I am obviously not an expert in terms of that, but I have worked with enough facilities to know when to defer to experts. Right. And working as a consultant with all these facilities, there are so many wonderful programs out there. And for people who are looking for help, I think it's important to not just find a place that says they can do it all, because that's certainly what Narconon tried to do. They're like, oh, yeah, whatever you got, just bring them. We can handle it. Mm-hmm. But there are actual facilities that have specialties. If somebody has a specific type of trauma, there's ones that, you know, specialize in dealing with those types of trauma. Sure. Gender-specific programs, you know, age-appropriate programs. There's so many things out there and wonderful help and people working hard to save lives. And there's also some other places out there that aren't great, that are follow the Narconon method of, you know, just promote like crazy until you get anybody and everybody in, bill the heck out of their insurance and hope that you can, you know, survive the storm.
Right, right. Well, that's amazing. And again, your book is called Have You Told All? Inside My Time with Narconon and Scientology. Where can people get your book?
You can go to lucascatton.com, but I think picking it up through Amazon, and there's a follow-up to that. The reconnection story is about all the lawsuits that I helped with and kind of rebuilding a life after that. Sort of that book started as I began to speak out, or that book ended as I began to speak out. The other one was a follow-up to that. So there's info on that.
Okay. And that's lucascatton, CATTON.com. Is that
yes.
what you said? Okay,
yes.
Good. Luke, thank you so much for everything. And thank you for taking the time to speak to us and for all the work that you've done. We're happy to have you and support you and all that you're doing.
Thank you both so much. I really appreciate everything that you guys do. It's really been an honor.
Thank you, my friend.
Till next
Bye-bye.
Time. Thank you, everyone.